We only have the special guest come on here for more than one appearance. Ryan Russillo back on the Bat Signal podcast about a year and a half later. That episode that we did, I can remember vividly. It was right after New Year's. We were talking about like fasting and intermittent fasting and juicing and you setting up barbell racks in your garage and all that fun stuff. We had a very heated conversation about the Celtics. And wouldn't you know, about 9 months later, my hatred for the Celtics landed me in Miami to work for the Miami Heat. So now we have a series that's coming up, depending on what's going to happen in Milwaukee with the Celtics and the Bucks, the Al Horford game. We'll get to all of that. Ryan Russillo, welcome to the Bad Signal podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. I didn't know that it was pure hatred for the Celtics. I mean, how did that happen?
It's not, well, I think I told you this. So when I was 16 years old and they traded Antoine Walker, ironically, to Miami, that spurred the feistiness of me calling into sports radio nonstop, like harassing Dale and Holly, being like, this was a huge, huge mistake. And they told me I was a woman, I wasn't allowed on air. And
wait, who said that? Dale and Holly on the air said that to you?
The producers wouldn't let me. I was 16 calling into EEI. I mean, like, you can't do this anymore. They said I was a woman, I wasn't allowed on air. FCC rules, I had to be 18. This is, how old are you, kid? Oh, you're 16? Nope. So I wrote my college essay about calling into EEI. I was furious about Danny Ainge. It's always just kind of been in my blood.
Like his first thing, though. That was his first, that was like the worst. I mean, you were that out on Ainge that quickly.
I was very out on Ainge at a very young age.
I guess so.
A very young age. I think I was born to be a Pat Riley follower. Can I tell you a funny story about last night? So
yes,
I wanted to do a feature piece. I work for the Miami Heat Radio Network and help out with a bunch of stuff down here with the broadcast team. And I wanted to do a feature on right when we started the playoffs, as you, everyone's favorite playoff saying, white hot or this. And I was thinking, I was like, Pat Riley, burn the boats. That's such an epic quote. I remember it from the 2013 finals and against the Spurs and this. So me thinking, not looking up the origin of the term, I was thinking last night, I was like, game five, there's no turning back. There's no turning back. So I come in there, I'm telling all my bosses, I'm like, we burning the boats today. So I was like, we can't turn back. And Jason Jackson's like, Courtney, I believe that's correct. But listen, in foreign times, we would go to foreign lands. You would land there, you'd burn the boats because we need the boat to get back to Philly because we have a game six to go play. So I was like, scratch that. We need the boats. Don't burn the boats. Don't burn the boats. What is your favorite playoff saying or your Pat Riley-ism?
Pat Riley-ism? I don't know if I have any. I don't study at the altar of Pat like Dade County. But I'm trying to think. Like whenever I see the shirts, though, I'll look and be like, ooh, white hot. I'm like, ooh, okay, all right. These guys meet in business. And then the college, like during the tournament, it was ball in. And I was like, wait, Michigan, like they have to be ball in, but then also this other school is ball in. So I was like, okay. Some of them are the Jazz take note. I can't tell if that one's great or terrible. I just
take note.
Yeah, it just says take note. So every team has their thing. And Utah's is always take note.
Well, so here's the funny thing that I read this, this anecdote this morning about Sean Kemp talking about Larry Bird and how great he was at trash talking. So 30 years later, Sean Kemp, he came into the league and broke a bunch of Larry Bird's rookie records. And they finally met up and Larry said, oh, you're the little punk who broke all my records. I have something to show you tonight. He dropped 40 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and he called every single shot. So maybe that's kind of like the take note. But I feel like you have to play a good game or have something to take note from. You can't just like take notes on the fly.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously take note means like we're here and then our symbol is a note because it's actually our franchise is from New Orleans, which never really made a ton of sense anyway, that they like back then you used to just have to keep the thing. Didn't mm-hmm. make any sense. Like if Miami had started in Montana, it might be the Miami Cowboys and you'd be like, that's weird. But luckily now they updated that and they changed it around. But yeah, so the Miami Heat's white hot, right? Is that what it is? And then they wear the white.
It's white hot. So yeah. So I believe the origin of this, it started many years ago. They did like playoff themes. They did like a black, they did a red out, and then they did white, and then they started winning. So I think that was back in, I believe it was back in 2006. So that kind of stuck. And it's, I mean, like, what's more Miami than white linens?
Right. What's going on with that couple there, the Met Gala couple that's been courtside for all these playoff games?
So that girl, she is Radmila Lola, I believe her name is. Wow. She is a season ticket holder. She is a Russian opera singer, and she actually sang the national anthem. It was during the Laker game. It was that weird game that was like a 1 o'clock game on a Sunday with LeBron. And so she's always there. She's always in crazy costumes. She's Russian. So you can look her up. Her name is Radmila Lola.
That's the best answer so far. Cause I was like, oh, you're on it. I'm plugged in.
That's why they pay me the big bucks. Speaking of big bucks, Brady's television gig. Do you oppose to this?
I'm not against anybody in our industry making money, you know? So, but I think what's happening is we're seeing that the very top it's a lot like, you know, a reflection of the economy in our country. But the networks have just basically said, it doesn't matter. Like, we don't care. We're going to pay the very, very top. We're not going to do these experimental things. Although Brady, in a way, is experimental when he's never done it before. But, you know, it's more personality driven. You know, it's not going to be that hard unless you have no personality whatsoever. But it's just very telling that the networks recently across the board have gone, we're going to pay whatever we need to pay to get this right, or at least have that name that gets people excited. And I do think that hurts kind of like the middle class of some of the companies. Like, when I think about, you know, when I hear about Friends and salaries and different contract offers and all that kind of stuff, it's like, well, the money has to come from somewhere. So these top end NFL broadcasting things, like, this is nuts right now. I mean, that deal, $37 million, like, I don't even know where you go from, like, the start when you say, if we're almost 30, then I'm worth this because I won a Super Bowl. Well, I guess so, because they said yes to it. So there you go.
I'm just wondering why Jim Rome still garners.
I don't think that was right.
Yeah, I don't think that's right either. I'd like that's how for Rome. CBS Sports. I don't even. I think that, man, when was the last time that I saw him? I feel like he would do random stand-ups or something, and he'd be like by the beach, but I think that was like maybe only one segment as a part of the weekend CBS Sports Network or CBS Sports pregame show. Like, I don't even think he's.
Yeah, I think the thing with Rome that he did, and he was really smart about it. I don't know this because I don't know him at all, but I believe what I was told was that in the very beginning, he kind of owned the rights to his show, so that when it was simulcast throughout the West Coast, like, that's how he made a ton of money. So, like, that number could have been at the time nuts, like, certainly more so than somebody like me who just worked at ESPN, got paid to do a show, and then that's what my job was. Yeah. But I think he kind of did far more ownership in the beginning of it. So I don't know if there's some weird, you know, I don't know that it's like residuals or something, because it's not like music that people are playing over and over again. But maybe the number is bigger than people think. But a lot of people kind of hit me up after and was like, did you see this thing that was going around from The Athletic? And I go, yeah, I don't. There was a lot of people that were like, that's not an accurate number anymore. But I don't know. I mean, look, celebrity net worth is all over the place. So,
yeah. Do you feel like some of these broadcasts, and I know people who have been exerting frustration or just expressing frustration about the Apple TV deals with the baseball. It was like, I think the last couple of games they were at Fenway Park, and people, at least on my timeline, are like, where is the Red Sox game? And they're like, Apple TV, see ya. Are we going to get to the point where there's so many streaming services, it's going to do a disservice to the sports fan? I think that's a legitimate question, at least for me. I mean, I know my mom subscribes to every single HBO Max, Hulu, you know, but she's retired. She can pay $300 a month for all that stuff to go get her TV shows. But I'm not stretching out the bank to go do that.
Well, you know, I think it's about survival right now for all these companies, and I'm just a moderate level of understanding of it. But you know, there is such a boom for content creators over the last few years. Like, if you had any kind of track record, people were getting deals left and right. I mean, there's all sorts of money flying around for people trying to figure out a way to stand out. And there you have Netflix. It felt like they were dominating it. And then, you know, you see what happened to them recently with their stock being under earnings and people being like, wait a minute, is this thing not taking over? So it's so competitive right now that ultimately, and I remember, you know, having meetings at ESPN about this, and it was cool because at a certain point, like, I got to a level where, you know, some of the top people would talk to me, you know, once every 6 months or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about live rights, and it's something I always repeat to everybody. And it's like, okay, the Apple deal with baseball was what, $100 million for the Friday games.
Yeah.
There's no replacing live rights. So even if traditional ratings creep down, it doesn't matter. And that's why the franchises are going for so much, because of the TV deals, because the TV deals are completely fueled by the fact that all of these other competing devices, all these other streaming platforms, all of these, that none of it has to be live. Almost none of what we watch has to be live. So sports is almost, I think it's like a 99% live audience still.
Yeah.
So even if a traditional rating, say you were like getting a 12 or whatever, and then it were an 8, it still might be more valuable than the 12 because all of these other places are fighting over each other. So I think the consumer part of it is very frustrating, trying to figure out the deal. And yeah, the Apple thing is new. So then, of course, everybody's complaining. You can't find your game. But that's why baseball got $100 million. That's why the owners got, you know, the money to put it out there. And that's why Apple was like, we need something that's live and in the moment. And baseball was probably the cheapest option for a Friday.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really following so much baseball because the Red Sox, it's funny, the 2012 Red Sox with Bobby Valentine had a better record, have a better record than this current baseball team. I know that they did beat the Braves last night, but are you big on the Dodgers out there? Are you still following the Red Sox? I mean, what's your temperature flavor? What's the Ryan Russillo flavor on baseball?
I get really into baseball at the very start because the basketball is finishing up, you know, the regular season, which is a little rough. Teams are tanking and, you know, some guy will get like 50 and you're like, what's going on? And we're just kind of figuring out the jockeying for playoff position. So I still watch it, but I get really excited about the start of baseball but then once the playoffs start up, it's harder for me to stay on it. I'll probably jump back in again this weekend only because it's starting to lighten up a little bit on the playoff part of it. This is a very tough baseball stretch. I'll pick it back up. I'm still very much into the Red Sox. It's not like I'd be rooting for the Dodgers. You know, there's never, ever going to be another baseball team. Although I would admit, because I have a very close friend that's on the Blue Jays staff, that every now and then I'll wear the Blue Jays hat. And it was funny because I was out, I don't know, a couple months ago or something like that. And I had this Blue Jays hat. I just like it. And I like that my friend is on the team. And, you know, I want him to do well, but I'm not rooting for the Blue Jays against the Red Sox in the series, but I just wear the hat every now and then. And I'll wear it on the podcast. And then, I don't know, some guy was like, I thought you were from Mass. He was like super upset that I was wearing a Blue Jays hat. I was like, you know what, man? Like, you know, I didn't try to move the Patriots to Hartford 20 years ago. Why don't you relax? It's just a hat. And so I'm still very much into it. This season's been really disappointing. But I also think it's not – like, I thought last year was as much fun as I've had as even some of the World Series years. Not 04, but – I loved last year's team. I loved how unexpected it was. Even myself watching them, Courtney, I'd be like, they're not this good. Like, this is crazy. And then they go on a roll. The bat shut down against Houston in the middle of the series. So that was disappointing. Yeah. And I went back to New England too. Like, I was staying at home. I was with my family. So we were kind of doing our old routine. And, you know, the whole day was just mapped around the Red Sox game and beating Tampa, beating the Yankees and all that kind of stuff. It was so much fun, but the whole time I'm like, I just don't feel like this team's pitching is that good. And I thought 2 years ago was literally disgusting what that team did. So you package it all up. I'm disappointed, but I'm not entirely shocked because I couldn't believe how good they were last year. And when you factor in how great the East is, the AL East, you know, they're probably, look, they shouldn't be this bad, but they're not more talented than Toronto or New York, and probably even so much with the arms of Tampa as well. So there you go.
Yeah. The Orioles are kind of the surprising team in the East. You know, I've actually made a pretty penny sometimes on their money line bets because
So you big O's positions?
No, I mean, no, I'm just saying, I'm like just observing the East, and I have the Toronto Blue Jays running away with the East. I know that you, yes, we have Aaron Judge, and he absolutely, what he did, the gritty after he hit a knockoff, like a walk-off home run and into the moon. And but the Orioles, I mean, they feast on left-handed pitching. They're pretty, they're not bad. They're really not bad. I don't know. I just don't. The Bobby Dalbec experiment for the Red Sox is just, it needs to end.
Yeah. I'm worried about the Story signing because it splits Colorado. I was worried about the rotation last year when it looked like they might be in the World Series. So to see like the rotation at times has kind of carried a bullpen that, you know, bullpens are really weird. And I was really into it, you know, coming out of working in baseball as a minor league announcer, nothing cool enough like being in the front office or anything. But you just were, once you understood that, you know, a lot of the arms, like the variance of success for relievers is just all over the place.
Yeah.
So to just say, hey, we're going to be fine because we were fine last year, really the case. And the Story signing is even more alarming if it's just a precursor to them not wanting to pay Bogarts. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I kind of had a feeling, oh, you know, Trevor Story, he's going to feast on the monster in Fenway. I just haven't seen it so much yet.
It's been bad.
It's been very bad. Listen, Dustin Pedroia is not walking through that door. That's all I got to say. Ryan Russillo is actually, if you guys are watching this on YouTube, he is wearing a camo sweatshirt, just like mine. He actually got on camera. We sat here and I was like, oh my God, like-minded souls were both wearing camo this morning. And he was like, nah, fuck this. Forget it. I'm switching the sweatshirt. He said that he wanted to switch the sweatshirt because he wasn't as nice as mine. I think you look fantastic this morning.
Thank you.
I appreciate you getting up. I know it's bright and early. I couldn't move today. Some of these games, just wait until we get into the Eastern Conference Finals. If the Miami Heat can take care of business on Thursday in Philly, let's talk a little bit about that game last night. Is this more so on Doc Rivers, or are you part of the notion that Doc Rivers is, you know, not really controlling this team? It's, you know, I've heard a lot of criticism from Sixers fans saying Doc is, you know, his rotations are terrible and he wants to start DeAndre Jordan instead of Joel Embiid. And Embiid came back and, you know, and really just gave them a nice B12 vitamin boost shot right in the butt to, you know, to get back into the series. But that looked like a team to me. Embiid minus 29, Harden minus 29 on the floor. It looks like they had the same energy of like the second night of a back-to-back.
I thought it was terrible last night. Just terrible. And, you know, the series has been really hard for me to figure out because without Embiid, you're like, okay, Miami's going to beat him. And that's exactly what was happening.
Yeah.
It's a free run for Bam because if they want to go with DeAndre Jordan, when he's been on the floor, I think the Heat's offense is like 149 points per 100 possessions, which is really, really good for an offense and terrible for a defense. And then Doc, you know, I understand the criticisms about it because now we're talking about playoff resumes that aren't very good. I always thought Doc's best ability as a coach was that he just had a mindset of relatability as a player who understood stars. I think he's really good with guys that are of a certain stature, but the playoff resume is what it is. And despite the title, there's some really head-scratching series in there. So when he was going with DeAndre Jordan, I actually wasn't surprised because I feel like coaches kind of always default to the vet. And he even himself, when he brought him back to start that second half, he said he asked the team. And the team said, we want to keep him there in roles because it'll open some things up for us offensively. You know, I don't know. The numbers at the rim against DeAndre Jordan have been really bad. I mean, it's actually kind of surprising. Mm-hmm. He's probably even in a rotation. So here's what's funny about that is that they're playing him. And even though Paul Reed brings all this energy, he's still smaller and he fouls all the time.
Yeah.
When Embiid came back, Paul Reed played and DeAndre Jordan didn't. So you're like, wait. So the minutes were so bad with DeAndre Jordan, but you kind of kept doing it. So I understand those criticisms. But last night, I don't understand it. I don't believe that Embiid all of a sudden was upset because he didn't win the MVP. Yes, he knew for weeks he wasn't winning the MVP. All right. Yeah. Everybody knew that Jokic was winning this thing.
Yeah.
So I don't believe the idea or, you know, the stuff they were talking about during the broadcast on TNT that he played so poorly last night because he was just overcome with disappointment. I thought they were so flat. I thought they were lazy. I mean, look, I've been on this Harden thing forever now. I don't understand how he's wired. I mean, maybe I do understand how he's wired, but I can't. You can have bad games. The best players in the NBA have bad games, have really bad playoff games. You know, that's why we spend so much time praising Jordan and Magic, and Magic's a little different because of scoring, but like LeBron's played 266 career playoff games. He's had single digits twice, 266. But that's like Jimmy Butler was awesome last night, but we know he could still have that back in because he's not LeBron, right? Like he's Embiid, you know, all these other Tatum, all these guys, right? Chris Paul, who I love, you know, he's going to have a bad playoff game. He just is. So for Harden, who can have a bad shooting game, but then have all these other elements of the game that he's just not interested. Closeouts in the corner that Jimmy Butler chased down where he got the offensive rebound and dunked it off the missed layup. Harden just let him run right past him and then get in front of him. Then, of course, Harden's pointing up for offensive interference. So I've always been very concerned with the mindset of a player like Harden, who is okay from either a lack of pride or not being competitive or whatever it is, like that he could play badly on purpose in two different cities in Houston and Brooklyn in back-to-back years within like 13 months of each other and be like, I want to play so bad on purpose so that you have to get rid of me. When you have that wiring, I don't like you as a player. And then right. and I see him in game five, a huge spot. He finally had a good game in game four. He finally, Courtney, had that really big second half that it was, because we know he's capable of dropping jumpers and 35 and the assist. We know what he's capable of, but you can miss shots, but be engaged the rest of the game. And he just doesn't ever seem to want to be. So then you see it playing out. It spreads throughout the team and Embiid gets hit in the eye again, which was the ball. It wasn't a foul. Can't call a foul on the ball. So, you know, I understand he's upset. It hurts, broken orbital bones, a tough pain to deal with. But I couldn't believe the entire, like, Miami just ripped their soul out of him last night. But I'm not sure they were even ready to play either.
Yeah. I also was observing a lot of people saying that, you know, oh, the reason that Harden even really had that big game, okay, James Harden is back, is because when Embiid comes, he opens up more space on the floor. Like he really vibes with Embiid and in that sense. And we saw, you know, Embiid is always in the paint, ready to contest. I didn't know if he's slightly timid about, you know, the injuries. I mean, he's playing with multiple injuries, credit to him. And that was a hard moment to watch when he went down. It's just like, you just got a feel for the guy. Just, I think defensively, everything that Bam really just stepped up to the challenge. I think it was less about, you know, James being lazy and James is going to play his game. I think the X factor last night was Bam on both sides of the floor.
Yeah. Bam's one of my favorite players in the league. And, you know, this is the one, you know, after game three and Embiid came back, you know, I always feel like, you can know, I mean, clearly Bam and Embiid have played against each other and you can know how daunting it can be. But like, it's a little bit like the Tatum thing in game three, like Wesley Matthews gets it back in Milwaukee. Wesley Matthews, who you thought at one point, like, you know, is he really a rotation guy? And yet he comes in with this ferocity and it kind of took Tatum an entire game to go, all right. And then he came into game four and you could see that Tatum was more assertive. He was making quicker decisions. He knew, okay, if this is what you're going to do to me, I need to adjust. Some players can figure out in a quarter. Sometimes it takes the entire game. Then you get to sit and think about it for 2 days and then come back. And I think for Bam, it was a little of that maybe, you know, game three wasn't very good because it was like, oh, wait, this isn't DeAndre Jordan. It's not Paul Reed.
Exactly.
And I'm going to have to figure this out. But what Jimmy has done the last two games, you know, almost keeping him in game four. And, you know, it's not just his scoring. It's the full attitude. Like the best versions of Jimmy are somebody you want on your team. And the worst versions of him are somebody that you're like, all right, we're ready to move on. But I always felt like Miami could probably handle him a little bit better than anyone else could. And they would get over it because of Spo and because of the structure of the team, the whole deal. Even if, you know, the blow up during the regular season, we felt like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, I wasn't so worried about that. And I think a lot of people internally here were not really so worried about, you know, that whole blow up. At Udonis Haslam says you should see his other practices. It's even worse. The funny thing is, I saw another stat this morning that Max Strus has the highest plus minus percentage of all players in the postseason. How do you not give credit to Adam Simon or Eric Glass and the Heat's G League development program? Can you talk a little bit to that extent? You've got a bunch of undrafted players, and you know how well Gabe Vincent has been playing. just in the space of Kyle Lowry being out and not being available. This has been a consistent factor for the Heat. I mean, they've been missing their superstars at various points of the season. And just talked a little bit to the development of you know, the Heat with Simon and Glass.
I'm blown away by those guys because, you know, I had George Sedano on this season in the middle of the year because you're watching Strus do his stuff. Year seven, even I thought was playing like really good minutes for him. Basically, mm-hmm. their top three guys, like a lot of teams, by the way, a lot of teams that missed their players. But I think when you looked at it, when it's all said and done with Miami, like their top three guys missed, I don't know, almost 20%+ of the season.
Yeah, I think there was one point at that because Bam went out December 1st, was out 6 weeks. Jimmy was out with various ankle sprains, and then he had a tailbone issue that he re-injured twice. Lowry had the personal reasons. And I think there was one point maybe in February that they had only played 12 games together the entire season.
Yeah. We are crazy. It's kind of like the new NBA the last couple of years too.
Yeah.
It's like there's all these teams you're going, all right, well, you haven't really been together as much as I'd like. And normally I would just write that off, but now it's kind of the new reality of it. So back to the Miami front office, you know, it's one thing to pick the stars and for them to see the Bam part of it, because Bam was certainly a lesser version coming out of Kentucky. But then like Strus, Vincent, I mean, even Nunn when they brought him in.
Yeah. Caleb Martin.
Caleb who.
Two-way.
You know, right. I mean, he I'm shocked that in a way, like when I've watched he and his brother play, and granted it's a little different because Caleb had been in the league, but
yeah,
he just seemed to figure out exactly how to fill in those gray areas. And yeah, they're better at it than any other franchise. And it's been necessary too. Now, I mean, you can even bring in the Duncan Robinson part of it, which I know, you know, it's been a super disappointing stretch here and he finally got some minutes, but their track record is incredible with figuring out guys that can play. And it's not just, hey, we stink, we're going 25 and 57, and here's a nice little story of a guy who may stick in. Like, you're coming in and playing real competitive minutes in games that matter. Maybe that's part of it too, but they're terrific.
Yeah. What do you do with Duncan Robinson at this point? And, you know, and how hard do you think it was for him to sit? I know that there's no one that loves Duncan Robinson more than Eric Spoelstra. And I think that, well, really the emergence of it was the emergence of Max Strus defensively and his ability to, you know, to work both sides of the floor. I think that was kind of the deciding factor, the consistency factor for him. But what do you do with Duncan?
You know, it's bad right now, but it doesn't mean it's over. He's too good of a shooter, even though, you know, I know this year is not really the case. I'd be surprised if all of a sudden he just can't shoot. I also think he works so hard while he's on the court. You know, his off-ball cuts and that kind of stuff. Like, whenever I first started kind of learning about him, I'm like, this guy's unbelievable. Like, his off-ball, like, movement and awareness. Like, this guy, he was born to be a warrior. But, you know, Hero, who's definitely expanded his game. You know, like they run the offense through him at times, but we know the defensive liability. I think because of that, my guess would be that Spo likes, you know, however, you know, you're always trying to worry about, like, if you have some real liabilities on defense, like how many can I have out there? And especially in the playoffs too, like you'll see another team, if they're really tuned into it, they're like, okay, we're going to attack this. And then it's like, oh wait, we have two options to attack. Like, we can't do this. Mm-hmm. Let's try to hide one and then bring in a defensive guy. So my guess would be with the Duncan thing slipping the way it has and the Hero numbers not great defensively, that they're probably feeling like, however they're cycling out and staggering the minutes, that it's just harder to survive with maybe Duncan out there as well, if he's not offering you the shooting with Strus is at this point. But I'm not ready to like write him all. People, oh, he's untradeable, the contract, all stuff. Like, no way.
Yeah.
That stuff happens. They'll figure it out. I just think it's a bad stretch for him and it's unfortunate.
Does Tyler Hero get a max deal in the next couple of years? Like, how expensive is he going to be?
You know, I always kind of feel like, you know, we can say this player isn't worth this much money, you know, whatever the max deal ends up being. I know the cap's going up like $1 million.
Yeah.
But what you always have to remember, it's kind of like quarterbacks, right? Quarterbacks, you're not so much paying for the quarterback and how good you think he is. You're paying that he solves your problem of the position. And that if I say, oh, I don't think you're worth 30, I'd like to pay you 20. But you're like, well, but if I don't pay you 30 and then I have to find somebody, how is that going to work? So I'll use the DeAndre Ayton example. Like, there's times where I watch him and you go, okay, maybe Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns, who's a historically incredibly cheap owner.
Yeah.
Maybe he goes, well, wait, if we don't really pass the Ayton a lot and we don't, you know, he's not like the focal point of what we're doing here, do I really have to max this guy? And I also think too, because the way the cap space, I'm giving you too long of an answer here, Courtney, but I promise I'll bring it back to Hero.
No. You ramble your own way.
So
we're on Ryan Russillo away. NBA way.
If you're Phoenix and you're saying, well, why do I have to give you the full max a year before I actually need to? Like, we could just let this play out.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, teams would worry about the feelings and all that stuff. And Phoenix is like, why don't you just go ahead and get a restricted offer somewhere else and just go ahead and match it? Because we don't think you're going to want to sign a restricted offer with Detroit, San Antonio, the Pacers. You know, Oklahoma City's actually not under the cap, but like, whatever. There's the teams that are under the cap, it's not that many, and they're not really great landing spots. All right. So having said all that, I look at it as, okay, but what would it take, especially for a team that's still like in their window, what would it take for you to find a DeAndre Ayton type on the market, especially once you're over the soft cap anyway? Like, it doesn't happen. It doesn't mean, oh, now we get to spend $30 million on somebody else. No. You pay Ayton more than you want to because it's better than the option of trying to find somebody with far less resources.
Yeah.
So that's why I say all of that stuff about any contract and what Hero ultimately would be worth. Like, max obviously seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
But usually I factor in like 25 extra percent on whatever I think the price is, because there's like some real ego stuff comes into this too. He's a really nice player. I really like him. That's too much. But usually the team, although Miami, you never know with them, because they'll be like, nah, we're actually going to figure this out and do something differently. I kind of always default to, yeah, the guy's going to get his money, because you can't ever afford losing someone knowing that you don't just get to replace that guy with the same resources.
It seems like the NBA doesn't really have that much of an issue of overpaying guys. You know, and some of these contracts that are coming out are just absolutely ridiculous, especially if a guy like James Harden is trying to still get a max deal while falling on his face. You know, do you think he'll put out a max effort in game six while they lose and be like, see, I'm worth the $60 million.
I don't know what's going to happen in this series night to night, but that was really alarming.
Last night. I don't think Daryl Morey gets rid of him. I don't think there's any way in hell. That's like his.
He's not going to just let him walk.
No, right? He's not. I think that they pay him, much to the, you know, the anger of Sixers fans. I don't think Morey lets him go.
60 plus million in 2027 for Harden is just thinking about that 5 years from now. Like, if he looks like this now, but and by the way, in game four, he was like, oh, wait, he kind of looks like, I don't think, you know, look, he's never going to be the Houston guy from 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know why there'd be anyone present evidence that it would happen, but I don't mind any of these guys getting paid. I don't, like, good for you. Get the money. Doesn't need, like, I'd rather go to them than go to the owners, but I have to think there's a relationship thing there with Morey and Harden, unless Harden's, you know, going to demand something that, and Morey also very likely, knowing him, he might just go, hey, here's all your money. And then, you know, he'll go, I can figure out a way to trade you later.
Yeah.
Or I won't be here 4 years. Don't worry about that.
Listen, he's Mr. Analytics. What book was I reading? Oh, I was reading, It wasn't The Help. It was the first chapter of The Undoing Project.
Oh, okay.
Different and it genre. Was about Daryl Morey and analytics. Ironically, it was weird. It had nothing to do with the story, but he was, you know, making the example of you know, analytics and behavioral, you know, society of like analytics. And I kind of like that psychology type of stuff. I'm not really making sense to anyone that's listening to this, but great book.
You did lose me for about 10 seconds, I'll admit.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. We're both.
No, it's okay. I'm here.
Ryan Russillo on the Bad Signal Podcast, brought to you by Better Edge. Do you bet? Do you have a little like betting stuff?
We get a little FanDuel same game parlay we give out once a week.
Oh, but okay. All right. Are you winners or are you losers? Like,
with me, I'm almost always, like, for years that we did it for ESPN, it's comical. Guys will just laugh at how often I'm 500.
Like, well, listen, that's normal. You just fall back to the mean.
Yeah. Fall back to the name. I'm like an amusement like park where you just pay and then you get in, you have the experience, and then you just leave with your experience. So, you know, you don't get to buy fancy clothes, but you also aren't worried about lying to your wife about the car payment either. So.
Listen, I think that you're just like every average dude that goes to Vegas. You win some, you lose some. Well, if you want to go to betteredge.com to place a bet, you get $20 using the code Courtney. And I have to drop that in there because they are a sponsor. And I'm not saying you're looking with your
let
eyes.
Let them know. Yeah. Like,
listen, a FanDuel. You can drop your FanDuel code in there. Ryan, what are your thoughts on flip-floppers? National media members who are flip-floppers. And I'm looking at you, Kendrick Perkins, Mr. I can't wait to come to Miami. And he's messaging me, well, we're going to get crazy in South Beach and this. And the Heat are my dark horse favorite to win it all. And every time I pop on my TV, that guy is like, the Celtics are winning the championship this year. What do you think about flip-floppers, man? Kurt, what's the deal? I'm calling you out.
I know what the job is, right? I mean, I worked there for 15 years. I know what producers like, and producers, and I think you're better off just coming out, and who cares what you said the day before? Just go with it. How you feel in the moment? That's the best way to do the job. I did it the other way. I was like, oh, I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe it's just shooting variants. Those aren't great ways to fill a TV show, great ways to fill a radio show.
Did they kick you out?
No, they didn't kick me out. I turned down an extension.
I know. We know.
I wanted to move. I know what the game is. I know what the game is. So I don't really pay attention to it. I don't like if I would never read a Kendrick Perkins tweet and be like, oh my God, though, you said this 2 days ago. I'm so man. And then tweeted him like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
You know,
he's a riot. My friend actually, who works for Fox Sports, she had a wedding down here in Miami. Then she's like, you know what? We were talking about Perk, and she's from Boston, and she was saying, you know, like, I just got to say, like, when he was doing some freelance stuff for Fox Sports, like, you would think that he just kind of goes off the cuff, but he has like pages of notes behind the scenes. He's like, he will read it to the producers and be like, what do you guys think of this take and this? And like, he puts so much time and effort into what he says, how he says it. He really is very, very prepared on television, and a lot of people don't know that. So, you know,
no, he's good on TV.
He's fantastic on TV, so, but yeah, no, he prepares. He brings it.
Right, but I don't know. Honestly, I do my thing. I watch the games, I take notes, and then I talk, and then I literally don't care what anybody else has to say. I'm sorry.
All right, so what do you think is gonna go down with this Celtics Giannis? You know what, all credit. I was watching that game, Al Horford. I remember when they picked him up, and a lot of people were like, why are you bringing this guy back? Oh, it's a trade ploy. There were a lot of rumors that he was just going to be a trade piece for someone else big that was going to come down the line. It was going to be, you know, a trading partner.
Get rid of Kemba's money too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Al Horford had the game of his life going up against Giannis. You know, an interesting aspect, it's like Giannis versus the refs. I know that they bailed him out there in game three. But it's, You have to remember that when Giannis was a rookie or his sophomore season, Giannis is throwing that hook every time he goes into the ball. And before he was a superstar, he would foul out just about every other game, you know. And now, because he's a superstar, he's not getting those calls. You know, it's going to be a slugfest series. Sorry, it's going to be a slugfest series. But you know, how do you see this playing out? Just in terms of Giannis in the paint with the Celtics, against the Celtics, you know, can the rest of their bench kind of step up?
Well, the Giannis part of it obviously has to scare the hell out of you. I thought when Middleton went out that Boston should win the series if Boston's as good as they looked like if they closed. I mean, the second half of the season that Boston had, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, wait, what, you know, and there were some minor changes, and I think moving some pieces out gave them better options just by – you know, like giving it to Dennis Schroeder, who in certain roles, maybe as a sixth man initiating all the offense in the zone, like he's capable of doing that kind of stuff. But when you're closing a game with the starters and then they're kicking it to you and you're kind of doing your own thing, well, it clearly wasn't working. Defensive adjustments with Robert Williams all of these things that just kind of came together. And I kept thinking like, wow, like they're beating these teams. And I still wasn't sure. Like when they first put that record together, I was like, okay, but this team was missing this guy, this team, you know what I mean? I kept like kind of coming up with excuses for why they were turning around. And then it just kept happening. And they finished, you know, the numbers would tell you they were the best team in the NBA from January something on, beginning of February. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Cause I still thought Phoenix was the best basketball team. So if all of that was true, which I'll admit, I still, even in game four, was kind of having my doubts again, going, oh, you know what? Like that was a little, and I still think some of the metric stuff, some of the analytic models that projected them to have like twice as good of a chance of winning a title than anybody else, I thought that was still pretty aggressive for even a team to finish that way. But you get Giannis, it's just not really, like, you're just going to have helpless moments. I don't care how prepped you are. I don't care about building the wall. I don't care about your help rules. You're going to have helpless moments. You just are. And yeah, he travels. A lot of guys travel. And there's certain moments where he can just physically do whatever he wants. But like, I kind of struggle with how I talk about him, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm diminishing anything, because, you know, I've argued Durant was the best. Durant was the best. I certainly felt like Durant was the best a year ago coming out of that series that the Nets lost. You know, at one point the Nets were the one seed. It looked like Durant was in the MVP conversation. And I just like somebody that can shoot better than somebody that can't. But the way Giannis is just controlling a game, and I love his ferociousness. I love his attitude. I think sometimes he even exhausts himself because he goes so hard. He's the opposite of some of these other guys that we talk about. So you're just going to have absolutely helpless moments. And, you know, you got to hope that Tatum can keep pace with them, and that you're shooting, you know, like the Celtics, I think, were plus 17 and made threes in game two. Like, that's the kind of stuff. If you have that, then you have a chance to win. So it's a really good series. It's really physical. The Giannis part of it's incredibly frustrating. If I had to guard him, I'd be so mad about it. Yeah. Like, wait, I get my ass kicked and I get a foul called on me. Like, really? But in a way, you know, we start winning MVPs. This is what happens.
Yeah. Are you worried about Jalen's consistency?
Yeah, I am, because I've felt like for Boston, he's the key to the series of them, because there'll be so much attention on Tatum. Although I felt like a lot of the Tatum stuff that happened in game three was just him not meeting the moment. But a lot of games when, you know, this isn't complicated. The teams, I feel like more so last year, you know, I don't know if it's a year plus 2 years, but teams are selling out against the best ball handler. You know, like, so if Tatum's bringing it up and you're setting the screen to stay with Tatum, I mean, they've been doing this a long time, but I felt like this year was more aggressive than other years that I've seen it. So that means you, as the ball handler, knowing they're going to be trapped, extending it out, keeping two with you all the time, like, you have to have a plan. You have to have a counter. And that means usually getting somebody else, hoping that it's this kind of 4-on-3 advantage behind the defenders. And Jalen has crushed it at times, and then other times he has not. And I don't know, it, like, in a weird way, it should be easier for Jalen than it is for Tatum, because he's never going to be the focus the way Tatum is when they're both out there at the same time. So I'd say there have been games where I go, oh, Jalen's, you know, looks like an all-star tonight, and this is going to be a Celtics win because he's torching everybody against the pressure against Tatum. And then other times, it's not. Some of the passing will get a little shaky, you know, maybe force it a little bit here or there. But I mean, look, he's an awesome number two. But him playing well, is, if he doesn't play well off of Tatum and all his pressure, then the Celtics will lose.
Yeah. What about the Bucks role players? Do you think they have the capability of stepping up?
Well, I don't know that Drew's a role player, and I'm saying this here, but he's taken 93 shots, I think, in this series, which is a lot for Drew Holiday.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're coming off a year prior to that big shot he hit against the Nets at the end of that series where we were like, what is wrong with Drew Holiday? Like, you pay him this money, you trade this many resources for Drew Holiday, and this is what you're getting. And then he hits that big shot, and we realize now, I mean, I think Drew might be a better defensive player than Marcus, to be honest with you. But he's being asked to fill this huge Middleton shot attempt role, which it isn't working. The numbers aren't very good. Brooke Lopez really screws up Boston certain times because you have to keep a big on him in the corner because he's such a terrific shooter. But then sometimes I feel like he can get exposed against maybe some smaller pick and roll games, but I don't think Boston's really trying to do that against him. Wes Matthews is one of those guys where you think he's done. It's a little like PJ Tucker, where PJ in Houston, you're like, oh, he's probably done. And then you're like, no, once you get him into a system and a team that's playing for something, these guys are energized by it. So if Milwaukee can get back to Giannis, you know, off of misses. That's the biggest thing. The series for Boston is shoot at a respectable level, because if you're missing a ton of shots for a quarter, those guys are going to get out and transition with Giannis once he has a head of steam. There's nothing you can do. And he's been a much better mid-range shooter from last year to this year for Giannis. And some of the passing and playmaking stuff that he's shown when he does get cut off or he does get trapped, doesn't have an angle to the hoop. The passing this year has been incredible. So if Milwaukee spaced out and Giannis is running up and down the court, even without Middleton, it's a really daunting task. But I finish with this. They're stubborn still a little. You know, Giannis came back in with 4:20 left in game three.
Yeah.
Game four, when Boston won even the series.
Yeah.
Giannis came back. Remember, they took him out for a minute because he was so tired. He'd like to work himself in his
fury. Yeah.
He was so tired. So Giannis comes back in. He only took one shot, I believe, from 4:20 on. And they stopped hunting Jaylen Brown in those switches. I think Derek White was out there, who somebody would have maybe run some action to get him ISO'd on that side. They just kind of stopped doing it. So I thought that was a mistake by them offensively.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, it's funny to think that like PJ Tucker was actually on this Milwaukee Bucks team last year. And I know that when they opened the season, or the first home game was against Milwaukee, and PJ was, he had a lot of things to say behind the scenes, and he was really pissed about the fact that they didn't even think to offer him anything. And he's made his home in Miami. He's just the perfect Pat Riley,
perfect.
Relentless competitor on both ends of the floor. His effort is inspiring. It's infectious. And were you surprised that they didn't offer PJ Tucker anything after he left? Or I mean, like, is this kind of like a win-win situation? Because Miami, I think he's going to be a Heat.
I feel like Milwaukee won't. For the order of players that they had to pay, I felt like PJ was just behind some of the other guys that they were.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it had. I don't think it was any lack of belief in PJ Tucker. It was just, we have different guys that we want to pay.
Are you worried about Kyle Lowry and his hamstring?
Yeah, big time. Because when he was back in game four, he looked bad.
Terrible. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, you know, I'm not a huge, I respect the hell of Lowry. I just hate watching it.
Is it Kyle Chaos? You don't like the Kyle Chaos?
Kyle Chaos.
That's what they call it when loves to speed up the game. I mean, it's
what did they call it when he was doing the same shit playing for the Raptors? You're like, oh, this guy's so chaotic. We love it. It's awesome. No, he falls down, he's rewarded for it, and it's ridiculous.
So, who do you think is going to the Eastern Conference Finals? Who you got?
Well, I mean, look.
The Celtics have home court. They have, you know, there's a reason why they fought for that seeding. You know, a lot of teams will lay down, and you know, the Heat, they fought for that home court. Celtics have home court over the Bucks. What do you think?
I'll say Milwaukee, Miami. I mean, Miami's easy now. I got 2-1, so
yeah.
You know,
put that in your same game parlay.
There you go. Rick Courtney promo code.
Oh yeah. Promo code Courtney on Better Edge. Perfect. No NBA betting for me. I'm an employee of
that's league. Right. I'm yes. Sorry.
No. No, it's totally fine. Damn, we're all in on NFL season. Football season. I rock the Fade Fallon. I've got, you know, Fade Fallon merch. You know what the Fade Fallon means?
I do. Okay, come on. I have a Twitter account.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you see it. You see my stuff. I know that you tweet and you get like 87,000 tweets.
No, I don't. No, yeah. Most people don't understand what I'm making fun of. But wait, so are you a Pats fan then, or are you like just you don't care anymore?
No, I'm a Pats fan, but I'm just I wrote that down on my list. Did the Pats have a chance to drop to absolute sheer irrelevance this year? Because I think they do. I think they go 6-11. I'm looking at that schedule. The schedule releases tonight. Do you care? Do you give a shit anymore, Ryan? Okay. So
I've never cared about the NFL schedule release. By the way, I am literally day to day. I wake up and go, what do I have to do today? So when somebody says, hey, what can you do in 3 days? I go, I don't know. And so for me to be like, oh, week four at Buffalo, then at Miami, week five. Wow. Like I can't do that right now. And I do think there's a weird thing in media where like NFL people try to pretend that like, yeah, but I really like my league, you know? Days away from week one. I'm like, who cares?
See,
cool, you like football.
You're talking to a girl for the last 8 years of my life when I was gunning for that job at NFL Network and eventually, you know, became the Patriots correspondent and worked at the league. And that was my dream job. And, you know, they told me, they said, give up every other sport. You're not allowed to watch any other sport. You got to breathe, eat, sleep, X's and O's. Put that in your Wheaties and eat it.
They told you you weren't supposed to watch basketball because you were an NFL Network reporter.
Yeah, no, they said you better immerse yourself and better be your language. And so, I mean,
football's easy. It's on one day a week. I don't know. I love the NFL. Okay. I love college football. I love football. This is not a like any, but there's a weird prideful, like, no, but I really like the NFL. You're like, well, what? Like, yeah, no. I really like it. Like, really? NFL, you know, like, there'll be some offseason headlines like, oh, the NFL just does not stop. You're like, okay. Like, what? What's the award that you're winning? Like, what is your shirt that you get?
You get a medal, a crown.
That's so dumb that you
like, there are people, Ryan, yeah. There are people who are doing fantasy football leagues in the middle of April.
Cool.
I don't understand it. Find me someone who is doing a fantasy football league, a keeper league draft in the middle of May for the NFL season that starts the second week of September.
Well, they may want to do it because the draft is over, free agency, and you know they're ready to go. They're prepped up. Good for them. Enjoy it. I like the NFL again, like I said, but it is a comically easy league to pay attention to.
Yeah,
it's so much easier than any of the other ones. And like, it's not, wow, you watch all the games on Sunday and then the one on Monday. Holy shit. How do you do it?
You sounded like such a masshole there. Holy shit.
Good.
Let's go to the Packy, man. I feel like you as an NBA guy is like, this is going to be the promo that just cuts down all of the NFL reporters. My job as an NBA reporter is so much harder.
I'm not a reporter, but it's just
as an NBA super fan.
Right. Man. It's harder to watch 30 NBA teams over 6 months than it is to watch 32 teams play basically all their games on one day, except for the Mondays and the Thursdays. And then it's like, man, NFL. the NFL. NFL's king.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. I know what the ratings are. I see them too. I'm not arguing it. I'm not saying the NBA is a better product. I'm just saying the NFL is a super easy product to follow.
Yeah. Last time you were on the show, I think you were surprised that I wasn't buying into all the drama of the NBA. I think we had like a heavy discussion about that. So, you know, you are simplifying the NFL for me and saying that, you know, the NBA is a much more intricate concept because, listen,
it's just more games on.
You can talk in NFL storylines. I feel like you could have a conversation about the AFC West in the middle of the summer and just fill up an entire hour of a podcast. I'm not sure. Can the NBA, can you do stuff like that?
Give me your awesome AFC middle of the summer topic right now.
Okay. All right. So, the Chargers defensive haul is, you know, and all the money they bought and paid in free agency is not going to pay off against Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes in the West in terms of competing to be the best team in the division. You know, all the money they spend in free agency is all for naught, you know, because they just got Kyle Van Noy and, you know, they got Jason Jackson and.
How's that any different than, like, if in September I said, I like the trade the Knicks made, but they won't be as good as Boston or Toronto? Like, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's not.
Okay.
And by the way, even though I don't like it, NBA players being like, I'm not playing, I'm done, from a discussion standpoint, is better. Like, Aaron Rodgers tried to pull the NBA player.
Oh, God.
Didn't come up with any good reasons other than, like, there's just a lack of communication. And you're like, no, you need to do a better job of convincing me that you've been this wrong party. And then he didn't. And then I was like, maybe I'll come back. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yet in the NBA, even though I don't like it, the discussions around, wait, this guy's just not going to play? Oh, this guy's going to quit during games? Like, the absurdity, the soap opera part of that, which, again, can be a turnoff, is still a better, I think, discussion point than, like, do the Pats have enough edge, guys?
So, I mean, they don't. The answer is no.
They never feel like they do.
Is Ben Simmons done? Like, what? I mean, I...
No, he'll come back.
It's not the biggest catastrophe of all the NBA. Like, I, you know...
No, it's not a good look, but it's an incredible.
Is he going to win? Is he going to win the what is it? It's the, like the contract defamation.
No, it's just they filed a grievance
saying
that they should get all the money that they were, which was always the plan the entire time. Which
I said, excuse me for saying a defamation.
Yeah, not quite that intense. Yeah,
it's a Ben Simmons against the Sixers.
Yeah.
Sixers loyal fan base.
Nah, he was always going to do that. So, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see how it plays out. Because sometimes, you know, it'll be like, okay, it's zero or all of it. And then the parties are like, okay, I don't want to make zero. And the other one's like, well, I don't want to pay all of it. So we'll see.
I'm going to make you pay all of it. Because you have a nicer camo sweatshirt than I do, right?
No way. Yours is really expensive. Hope you have a promo code for that one.
It's the Aviator Nation.
Dude, that's not an entry level sweatshirt.
So you were worried about coming on my podcast wearing an entry level sweatshirt. Only high brand. You've seen my collection of vintage t-shirts and stuff. Listen, I bring it every time.
Yeah, no, I guess you do. No, I'm very proud of my Legends brand here. I just, you know, I don't know. I don't want to have the same shirt on as you. So I took it off and then you got upset. And I was like, oh no, we're getting off to a terrible start here.
Listen, I could, well, only because we match. Girls have a different aesthetic eye than a man, you know, like the matchy matchy to me is just like one and the same. We're equals. I'm trying to pull myself up to your level.
I do feel like an equal now. And that's me. That's an improvement from where we started.
Do you have anything to plug? I've been trying to get you back on as a repeating guest. I really, really appreciate it. I know it is bright and early out there in sunny Los Angeles. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate the don't ask Ryan what he's doing 3 days out. Law and rule. So you were like, Monday or Wednesday.
People will be like, hey, do you have time Friday? And I'm like, I don't know.
No.
I don't know. So.
What do you got going on?
We have a new pod that we're going to release. It's mostly based on folk music, but Celtic. Ooh. Yeah.
Folk like music?
Early 1600, 1700 range, because we don't want to – there's a certain time. There's a very obvious timeline in Celtic folk that you're like past that. It's not even worth talking about. So we don't know when the launch date is, but we're excited about it.
Did you master in that in college? I'm confused. Like, did you pick it up? Did you read?
No, it's just a passion.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Very. So my dad loves like war books. I mean, he went to Vietnam, so you know, like he likes to.
Earlier than that.
Of course. Listen, my last name is Fallon. You don't think I have a crest that my
that's Irish. Right. Those crests at your Irish buddy's houses, dad would be like
Fallon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it's such a Boston thing. So Fallon actually comes from O'Fallon. There is an O'Fallon region in Ireland. I think it's in the south. So everyone with the last name Fallon is somewhat related. So
we had some Fallons up in college, high school.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. Who knows? There's lots of Fallons. Now kids are calling, they're naming the first name of their kid Fallon. I think that's a pretty common first name now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Did not know that. You think it's you or Jimmy Fallon?
What do you mean? The Fallon is the first name?
Yeah. Do you think it's inspired by you in this podcast or like?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. There's like but they spell it with a Y. I don't really like that. Try to get fancy.
Out.
Fallon. I don't know. Ryan, thanks so much for your time. Go Heat. I'm sorry for your Celtics, since you already called it. You said Bucks and Heat, Eastern Conference Finals.
The Eastern Conference Finals
would save me a lot of grief. It would save me a lot of grief.
Yeah, the Eastern Conference Finals is very quiet now. Boston, but
we'll see what happens.
All right.